Award-winning journalists. New York Times bestsellers. No topic out of bounds. No opinions left unsaid. An institution for sports talk and information. This is The Sports Reporters. Here's Mike Lupica, Mitch Albom, and Bob Ryan.
I'm Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and ESPN.
I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press.
Yeah. I'm Mike Lupica of MLB.com and the New York Daily News. Welcome to the first pro post-pro football edition of the Sports Reporters podcast. And we're going to actually start with the NBA today because there's some injury news, minor, it seems, about Kevin Durant. But what could be major about Anthony Davis, he thought his Achilles, I forget what they call it, was getting better. And now they're more concerned about it than they have been at any point in the season. Guys, this is news that could alter the immediate and even the long range landscape of this season.
Absolutely. He's instrumental. I mean, you know, he's one of the five best players in the league. They got two of the five best players in the league, and he happens to be the other one. And they're not going to go, you know, they're not going to win without him. Period. I'm thinking more long range now. I'm assuming that he'll get healthy enough for the playoffs. But if he were not to be healthy in the playoffs, forget about it. You can cross them off the list.
I'm sure LeBron, if this turns out to be a more serious injury than they're hoping, will point to the fact that they didn't have enough rest, and they shouldn't, you know, have come back as quickly as they did, and they're paying the price for having gone to the championships and all that, because these types of injuries, the aggravations that then turn to more serious ones, do come from overuse, and even though they're, you know, you'll flip on a Lakers game every now and then, and you'll see Davis sitting because of load management, and you'll see the same thing for LeBron. You'll see it all over the NBA, but just the same, it's still a lot of games in a relatively short period of time. These type of injuries, whether it's a hamstring that Kevin Durant is dealing with, an Achilles, which is what Davis is dealing with, and they're far more serious, by the way, because you're always an inch away from ripping that thing and being gone for
Ask Durant.
Yeah, correct. But these things come from, you know, lack, and not so much the use, it's the lack of rest. It's you know, they get slightly aggravated and then you come right back out and play on it again. And this is what Davis had done. And now it looks like they're going to miss him for a while. And it also, to me, guys, always points out how durable LeBron James is. You know, that one time he had that groin injury at Christmas, you know, which turned everything around in that season for them. You see what happens when he goes down, but he remains. I mean, what is he, 10 years older than Davis? At least?
Yeah, nine. About, like nine or ten.
Nine or 10 years older than Davis. And he never seems to suffer these things, you know. You don't read a lot about him having an Achilles or him having a hamstring or whatever. The groin was about the only one. But I think you're right. Without Davis, they got a big uphill climb.
Well, and here's the thing about the Achilles, and Durant found that out. I mean, you go back to the football Achilles injuries, okay? Mitch and Bob, sometimes it's just like tread on a tire. That's all it is. I mean, Dan Marino was dropping back into the pocket. Vinny Testaverde one time was dropping back into the pocket, and boom, you know, they heard the dreaded pop. Now, that hasn't happened yet. But this is the kind of bill that is, Mitch is right, this is the kind of bill that is being presented to the sport for ending one season and then getting to the next one as quickly as it did. Now, would this have happened? Maybe it would have happened, even if they had had more time off between seasons. It's going to be the unknowable thing. No, but I don't. I think, Bob, there are going to be more injuries, not less, as we get deeper into the season.
Well, it is unknowable, and I'm not ready to sign on to that as the reason. Obviously, I must open my mind to the possibility that it is a very large contributing factor, and that, as you have just said, we will see more. I just not ready to go there myself. I'm sorry.
And but, Bob, and you know what? It looked like a nothing thing last night. I mean, he collides with Jokic, and mm-hmm. He gets hit in the upper leg, and then he lands on the, you know, his right foot, and all of a sudden, he's on his way to an MRI. Well, and that MRI is going to inform the rest of the Western Conference season.
He said that he had been having some pain in his leg for weeks, and that's a sign that it's coming. I can tell you from personal experience, I was playing basketball about his age started to drive down the lane and heard a pop, thought somebody threw something at me, felt like I got hit in the back of the leg with a tennis ball or something, and I just went down. And I was down, and I was like, what was that? You know, who kicked me? You know, and I still didn't think anything of it. It was, who kicked me? I tried to get up. There was no getting up.
Did you tear? Did you tear your Achilles?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah.
I never knew you did that. Mitch, we were playing our Thanksgiving Turkey Bowl touch football game one year, and one of my pals, all of a sudden, the play ends, he's sitting on the ground, and he said, I must have stepped on a plastic bottle. And I said to him, Mike, don't move. And he said, why? I said, because you just blew out your Achilles. And before we knew it, the ambulance was coming to get him in the middle of the field on which we were playing the game.
9 months. 9 months of recovery. And
people
are going
to think. I'm sorry. People are going to think we rehearsed this, guys, because I was before Mitch went into his story, I was about to interject that there is plenty of personal anecdotal evidence available for people, and that I know of at least two people who, as you, Mitch, casual citizens playing pickup basketball, who sustained this injury. And in both cases, the exact quotation was, who kicked me?
Yeah. Right. And anyway, let's hope it's not that. There's no indication that it is that. We saw how quickly it happened to Durant. We know what happened to his career because of it. So, you know, it's you know, we're playing this out because it's a possibility, but hopefully it's just a strain and rest will have him back on the court because it's it's silly for us to suggest that the Lakers would be the Lakers without him. But anyway, this thing dropped like a bombshell into this particular weekend of the NBA season, and now we'll see.
Yeah. By the way, one more example of that. That's Klay Thompson. I mean, look at the difference that his absence has made, and that's, you know, and he had an Achilles. It can take you out that long. You do have to be, it's not so much that he has it, guys, but that now he has to be careful that he doesn't get it, which means they really have to watch his load when he comes back. Even if this one is deemed to be mild can go to severe in a second.
This
and
is
so
load management that we're going to need, Mitch. You know, this we'll all sign on for this particular kind of load management.
They're dancing on a pin top now with that. Bobby?
Well, I was just going to say that apropos of all this was a story in Saturday's Wall Street Journal about the phenomenon of the Achilles tendon injury and how once upon a time it was an absolute athletic death sentence. And that now, thanks to the ever-increasing improvement of medical treatment, you can come back. And Durant was cited as Exhibit A, you know, of this. But I remember, I know of careers I can remember back in the 60s and early 70s, which were ended by the Achilles tendon. They're not ended now, but doesn't mean you're going to come back 100% for sure.
Let's talk about Brooklyn for a moment here. And, you know, with Durant now going out for a couple games, they were starting to get things together. But what's the, they're at almost at 30 games into the season. And I don't even remember how many we're playing this year. It's so hard to keep track.
It's 72.
Is it 72? That's
72.
What I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're, you know, less than 2 weeks from mid-season. Are they what we thought they were going to be once he joined them?
It's very simple, I think. They're going to be as good offensively as we thought. And the entire question when they get to the big games with the matter in the spring is whether they're going to have a viable defense, whether they're going to be willing to do it and capable of doing it once they put their mind to it. And that's that, the defense. So they do not have defensive stalwarts there. The people they're going to have the play a lot better on defense than they've been playing in general. And that's going to be the big thing. I think they're going to come together offensively all right.
I mean, there is this new iteration of the Brooklyn Nets in which, and who knows how long it will last, in which James Harden, who has been the most devastating scorer in the league over the past few years, has now become a distributor. He has now become their point guard of choice. And when you look at Saturday night's game against the Warriors, they kind of blew them, 134 to 170, they blew them out, okay? I'm looking at the box score for this game. And this, I think this is how Steve Nash would like them to play basketball. Durant played 33 minutes, he scored 20 points. Harden played 35 minutes, he had 19 points and 16 assists. And Kyrie Irving played 34 minutes. He took 17 shots. He had 23 points. And again, they blew out a good Warriors team. And so they have now reimagined themselves. And for now, Harden seems to be buying into the role of point guard. And now we'll see what they look like going forward.
And they've got one more guy that is an ever-present threat that is a perfect complement, that's with an E, to what they're doing on nights when maybe they're not all in, you know, having great offensive nights. And he can go off and get you 25 in a wink, and that's Joe Harris. Joe Harris, one of the great open shooters in the game. And that most people don't pay any attention to.
And they're
the fans,
small, Mitch. Mitch, they're small. I mean, as long as Durant is, he doesn't play like a big guy. He could probably, they could move him into point guard and let Harden go back to shooting the ball more. But they guard, Mitch, I'm telling you, I watch them. They guard no one. They guard no one. I mean, it's quite remarkable. And they're being coached by one of the great creative offensive guys in league history, and that is Steve Nash. And we're not going to know what kind of defensive team they're going to be till they get to the playoffs.
And look who his assistant is. Look, don't forget who his chief assistant
is. Michael D'Antoni.
So we've got, you know, D'Antoni, who is who's very, the very symbol of we're going to outscore you mentality in his entire coaching career in the NBA. And Steve Nash, who personally was never noted for his defense. We all love Steve Nash, God knows. But, you know, we're just saying it's going to be very interesting. Who's going, you know, where they're going to get this.
It's so interesting to me, the way the East is kind of laying out. I don't know, you know, how long the 76ers do what they do. Right now they're holding the number one spot. But Milwaukee, who everybody thought was okay, you know, once Giannis determined he was going to make his future there, they were just going to be head and shoulders out above everybody else. They're just 16-11. Brooklyn's 16-12. Indiana's 14-13. Celtics 13-13. Charlotte 13-15. Even the Knicks are 13-15. Toronto's 12-15. Bunch of teams that, you know, slightly above and slightly below 500.
The Heat,
Miami,
have been surprisingly bad. The Heat have been
11-15.
Yeah. But Mitch, you look at those standings, okay? And you just mentioned the Pacers, 14-13. They have the same record as the Warriors, who are the eighth team in the Western Conference. The Pacers are the fourth team in the Eastern Conference. And I think one of the reasons why we pay as much attention to the Nets, just in addition to the star power, is this, to me, and I don't know what you guys think, has been an extremely dreary Eastern Conference season.
And we have a team, Mike, in my backyard that has, I think, officially entered into the category of most disappointing. They're in the discussion, and they're right now they are the leader in the clubhouse based on their last two abominable performances, of which include apparent lack of effort, which leads one to question as to whether they are somehow, quote unquote, it's been written in the paper this morning, tuning out Brad Stevens. I don't know what's going on, gentlemen. I just know that they've been awful. They have injuries, and yes, Smart hasn't been playing, and they've had injuries. And right now, Tatum is in a dreadful shooting slump, which does date from his return from a COVID-19, departure. But they are they've just been woeful lately.
Then you have the
opposite of.
They were on the. I just was going to ask you, Mitch. You know, how much did it take out of them that they lost that series in the bubble to the Heat when you know we didn't know how good we were getting an idea of how good the Heat were, but it looked like we were on our way to a Celtics Lakers throwback NBA Finals, and they did not win Game 7. And I, you know, we talk about it all the time in football, Mitch.
Hangover.
Okay? Hangover. Okay? How much did that take out of the Boston Celtics?
Well, Mike, but I don't know if that's it. Only because, you know, the Walker factor, number one, they didn't have Walker to start the season. He had a knee operation. He's coming back. And actually, in the midst of this dreary stretch I'm talking about, he actually showed some signs of life we hadn't seen in him yesterday for the first time. So, you know, they didn't have him. And that's huge, you know. So I don't know if it was just a matter of the hangover thing. I mean, it could have been some of that. I'm not denying it. It's possible. But not having Walker to start the season was, you know, really the you know, I can use that as an excuse.
Yeah. Well, it's very hard to judge the NBA in February. I always say that you get the worst games. It's now you're so far into it that you can't see the beginning anymore, but you're too far away from the end to get revved up for playoffs, and you get a lot of weird nights of teams just saying, forget it, we're not winning tonight, and you see
Mitch,
good team get blown out.
I'm so glad you mentioned that, because as a guy who covered
We got to get in Geico. Before we have to remind people that we are sponsored by Geico. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. Go ahead, Bob.
As a guy who covered the league for 14 years, over and all three different times, it's so funny you mention that. February was the month when I earned my pay. February was the month when I needed to have the summon the creativity, whatever I could do, to make these, to write these games when the dreariness had set in and there was a malaise. The whole league was in this thing, and the games
were. But the season started later. Wait a minute.
That doesn't matter.
I'm just talking about
February. February. It's cold. It's snowy.
You're right. It's different now. The February, late March is going to be the old February. I understand that. But I'm just saying, it's funny. I just put a trigger. It just triggered something in for me, Mike. I mean, Mitch, when you said that about, I just remember thinking, boy, February was when I earned my money.
Yeah.
You know who's having no blahs? You know who's having no blahs in February?
Yeah.
The Utah Jazz are having no fuzz. And I've known Quinn Snyder a long time. I've seen the ups and downs of his career. Huh. He flamed out at Missouri. He went to the D League to coach. He rehabilitated his career. And you guys have heard me say this before. No one has been doing a better coaching job in this sport over the past few years than Quinn Snyder has. And now, lo and behold, the Utah Jazz have the best record in the sport.
Yeah.
Not only that, Mike, they're killing people. In this stretch of 16 out of 17, there are only two games in this stretch of victory in which they have won fewer than 10 points. I'm not going to give it a whole thing, but let me just quickly rattle off the last margin. 13, I'm going backwards now from the last one. 13, 10, 30, 14, 16, 14, 12, 19. That's how they're crushing people. It'd be worth the Elias Sports Bureau going through this. I don't know how historically many teams have ever had runs that are more devastating than this. And I'm talking about all the great teams in the history of the game, starting with the Minneapolis Lakers. If they've ever gone through a stretch like this.
I have a feeling that Michael and the Bulls, when they were winning 7,000 games a season, might have had a stretch like this.
When you got two out of 18 games that are less than what you're winning by double figures, you got six. I don't know.
But worth noting, just the way the schedule fell for them, their last four games, they beat the Pacers, the Celtics, the Bucks, and the Heat. I mean, they basically just knocked off the Eastern Conference four in a row. Charlotte before that. So yeah, they're playing phenomenal basketball. And you know, the mark of what you're saying, Mike, that's true, is ask anybody, even I don't want to say casual NBA fans, even sort of, you know, slightly more than casual NBA fans, to name anybody on that team besides Donovan Mitchell. I mean, nobody knows who
Gobert is quite famous now.
For the wrong reason.
No, but he's a star, Mitch. He is. He's a star two-way player. He has been a star two-way player for a while. I'm not saying he's on the tip of every NBA fan's tongue, but Rudy Gobert, he's a hell of a player.
Yeah, he is. Well, the wonderful subplot story there was the fact that Mike Conley is playing as well as he is at his age, and as well as he's ever played, quite frankly, as they say. I'm not watching them on a regular basis. I can't verify it, but I'll parrot back what I've been reading.
They blew out the heat without him. They blew out the heat without him. And by the way, they've got a kid I had forgotten from Baylor. Royce O'Neal is one, you know, he starts for them now, and he's getting big minutes. And Bogdanovich is a really good player. But Donovan Mitchell is, you know, if he were playing in a bigger media market, people would know a lot more about this kid than they do. He's a wonderful basketball player.
What's interesting, too, we consider, I guess, that he and Gobert have kissed and made up. You remember that was an issue back at the time. On the onset of COVID, Donovan was not very pleased with his teammate. What people say, well, how are they doing this? Well, it's very simple. They are a quintessential modern team. They shoot threes in abundance, and they make them. They've got five guys here that are shooting between 37 to 44% on threes in this upward order. They are Clarkson at 37, Mitchell at 39.7, Conley at 41, Bogdanovich at 41, and Joe Ingles, the pride of, you ready for this, guys? I can't make this crap up. Happy Valley, Australia. I don't know which province.
Didn't he play in Israel, too?
He may very well have. But Joe Ingles is popping him in at 44%.
It's part of, and this is not, this is a conversation for another day, but it continues to make, for me, this sport more unwatchable. And it's you know, 100 threes attempt, you know, whatever it is, 90 threes a night. It makes this sport increasingly unwatchable. You know what, Mitch? You know what it feels like sometimes? I'm watching the long drive contest in golf, which is not real golf. It's long driving golf. And I don't know how you feel, but I hate it, Mitch.
No, it's so funny you say that, because just before we started, I was watching some of the highlights from last night. And in the Portland game, Damian Lillard hit a big three-pointer down the stretch. And the move that he made was, you know, they gave him the ball. He was dribbling way out at the top of the key and then took the step back, you know, kind of pushed the ball back towards himself and pulled up and shot. And I said, I was just watching. I was thinking, okay, how many times do you just practice that by yourself? It is the quintessential sort of, as you say, the modern basketball move. It requires nobody else. Nobody. You don't need a pass. You don't need to look for anybody else. How can I get one step away from my defender, going backwards, getting further away from the basket? When we were growing up, the idea was always get closer to the basket. Let me get further away from the basket so that I can launch this monster three from way out here and hit it. And these are the moves that players are practicing in junior high school right now, and coming up and saying, this is how you win in the league that we ultimately want to be in, the NBA. And you're right. That's what the game is. And it is remarkable. It's remarkable to watch some of these guys fire away, from Steph Curry to LeBron to Lillard to any of them, and say, oh my God, how much further away can they get and still just not even come close to hitting the rim? You know, everything just goes right through. But from an overall watchable game thing, you know, being into the ebb and flow of a game and the drama of it, it's just watching skill shots. It's like the All-Star game thing. You know, I guess there's some drama in the three-point contest, but is it basketball?
Make no mistake, the godfather is Steph Curry. He showed it can be done, and he is the model, and he is the standard, and he's that move that you described. That's him, and that's it. He brought it to the game from the distance that he brought it from. The difference between Steph Curry and the previous great three-point shooters, most of them all, that we in the previous decades, where they were catch and shoot guys. Ray Allen was the standard before him. Right. Ray Allen was a curl off the pick guy. He was not a dribbled between the legs, back up, step, clear space. He wasn't that kind of guy. He was catch and shoot. The greatest catch and shoot guy still that we've had at threes remains Ray Allen. We have a whole new crop now, and you're so right, but the godfather of all is Curry. Let me just say this, Mike. I'm on my soapbox, and you may have the guys get the hook to drag me off. I would like to think that if they could run a LexisNexis, as we used to look for, or some kind of search thing to find out who started screaming about the abomination and the desecration of the game because of this hideous entrance into the game, the worst single thing to happen to basketball in my lifetime. I'd like to think I was first, and I have been screaming about this nonsense of the three for a long, long, long time, and it has completely distorted the game of basketball at every level.
And the thing is, it's not the genie is there's no putting the genie back in the bottle. Okay, Zach Cram had a piece at the Ringer the other day. Okay, the league is shooting way more threes than ever. 3-point performance is more meaningful than ever, and One reason the Jazz didn't go off on an epic winning streak is because the Nuggets went crazy against them one night with threes. And I don't, this is a longer conversation for an even quieter time in sports than February is, okay? I don't know what they can do about it. Okay, I don't know what they can do about it, but ball movement now. I mean, watch the old Pistons, okay? We all use the old Knicks as a frame of reference, the Celtics, blah, blah, blah. Good passing now is just swinging the ball around the perimeter until somebody's open for a three.
It's true. No, you're right. Yeah. It's not the game. It's a different, utterly, utterly different game.
We'll see a 4-point shot before we see them.
Oh my God.
The 3-point shot.
I bet you're right. And you know what? That'll just ruin it even more.
I've been worried about that, guys. I've been very worried about
Bob off the edge. You're going to hear a splashing sound. That was Bob jumping off the boat.
Basketball's been such an integral part of my life for a long, long time, and they're ruining my pleasure. It's ruining my pleasure. I even every level, as I say, but I've been watching as much college as I can lately, and there are teams out there that are fun to watch, but that can incorporate the three into it. If you want to find a place where it isn't utterly and completely dominant. One more thing to say: it's all well and good. We're all marveling at how good they are. Yes, the shooting percentages from this distance are remarkable. But there are nights when they aren't hitting, and then it is ugly. It is so ugly in a way the game was never ugly before, because there are times when even the best teams have off nights shooting threes, and it's just then the game isn't.
All right, on this happy note, and one that has lifted all of our hearts, let's switch to pro football. And it is amazing how a bad team like the Houston Texans has dominated the news of the offseason when we haven't been talking about the Super Bowl. And now they lose. I love Deshaun Watson. They lose the greatest player in the history of their franchise in J.J. Watt, because the greatest player doesn't want to play football for this mess of an organization anymore, and they're letting him go.
They are. I want to dive into what the way the owner handled that as well here. First, a word from our friends at American Giant. Hey, friends, more doesn't always mean better. Today, we buy 2.5 times more clothes than we used to. Not only that, we haven't worn over 80% of the clothing in our closet in the last 12 months. We buy more than we need because, well, it's cheap and disposable. But American Giant wants to change that. They make quality clothes here in the USA that are wearable for years, so you get what you want, not a bunch of cheap clothes you don't need and you'll toss out. I've gotten the hoodie and their t-shirts, and I can tell the minute I put it on, okay, this is a keeper. I'm going to be having this for years to come. You can tell the quality of the craftsmanship, the quality. You know when you have a cheap hoodie on or a cheap t-shirt on, you say, I'll probably get 2 wears out of this and then I'll put it in the dryer and that'll be the end of it. Not so for the clothes from American Giant. And it feels good knowing American Giant's supply chain is 100% in the USA. They support hardworking people and local communities by making products that last. Get 15% off your first order when you use promo code REPORTERS at American-Giant.com. That's 15% off when you use the code REPORTERS at American-Giant.com. They're trying down in Houston to put a spin on this, like this is somehow, hey, he's been such a huge part of our success, that we didn't want to trade him, and we're just going to let him go. The McNair family and McNair himself did an interview, and it was all like sweetness and light. There's no sweetness and light here. J.J. Watt not wanting to play for the Houston Texans is a big gong on what is going on down there, that nobody wants to be a part of it. This is a guy who embodied them. You're right, Mike. As good as Watson is, it's not even a contest between the two. No. He's been there his whole career. He's been a five-time, I think, Pro Bowl player, three-time Defensive Player of the Year. You don't lose a guy like this for nothing. They're not even trading him. They're like, okay, you don't want to be here. You want to go. Who on earth would want to stay in Houston? And I don't know if you can point to one thing that happened here that took them south. I mean, you can blame the previous regime. That sort of started it going, the O'Brien era, that started it going in the wrong direction. But they certainly haven't handled things very well since his departure. And the promising Deshaun Watson that he can have a say in the GM and the coach, and then not asking him to, just tell, he finds out on Twitter or whatever that they have a new GM, just set off. That's a self-inflicted wound, okay? That's not an athlete with an ego going crazy. You created that yourself. You went to him and told him you were going to do that, and then you go out and just hire the guy without any input from him. What'd you expect? That he was just going to say everything's fine? And Watt must see something there that ultimately is saying, there's a little bit of Matthew Stafford here. I can't win here, and I'm out of time to wait for the organization to get correct. Yeah. Same thing in a certain way has happened with Stafford and the Lions, only with a little bit more niceties. But he basically said, I'm 33. I got to take my shot. Here's Watt saying, I'm, what is he, 31? I got to go someplace else to win. Who wants to play for Houston anymore?
No, Mitch, if you look back, and again, I don't know whether this would be the worst hangover of all time, okay? It was 13 months ago that they were ahead of the Chiefs in a playoff game, 24-0. 24-0. And it was like they got dropped out of a window, and everything that has, the coach is gone. Watt is on his way out. Deshaun Watson, we don't really know what the status is. They have hired a new general manager. They have hired a new coach. The ownership is a mess, okay? And again, just think about this. I'm trying to think of something comparable. It would be like if Patrick Mahomes and Kelsey at the same time announced that they didn't want to play for the Kansas City Chiefs anymore. That's what it's like with Watt and Watson.
This mysterious, sort of semi-mysterious villain in all this is this guy, Jack Easterby. You know, they got a general manager, Nick Caserio, but Easterby also came from the Patriots. I didn't even know he existed until he left. I don't know. What is it he's like, or what had happened? But people seem to be, he's toxic in that organization. They hired him for whatever reason. I have no idea. They already have a general manager. They do have a general manager. I don't know what's going on there, but the word has been thrown around unilaterally, dysfunctional. There's nothing more to it, Mitch, I don't think, other than exactly as you framed it with Watt. Get me out of here while I still have something. It ain't happening here. It certainly isn't happening.
Look, here's their recent history. They, in the 2018 season, they went 11-5. That's pretty good. They won their division. This is under O'Brien. Then they lost first round of the playoffs. That's the beginning of one of those hangovers, Mike, that we talk about. Because when you have a promising season and you win your division and you get taken out early, that's the beginning of, oh, crap, now we got to go through a whole nother season just to get back to that point. We better not have that happen again. Okay, so they come back in 2019. They're 10-6. They beat Buffalo, and then they lose to Kansas City 51-31. And what were they ahead? 24-0?
Yes, sir.
It was 24-0, it was 51-31. That's the second bang of the hangover. That's like, getting drunk and then and heading home and stopping at a bar on your way home to get a little bit more drunk. And then they come out to the 2020 season and they go 0-4 to start. Remember, we were doing the podcast, we were talking about what's the matter with Houston. They have all this talent And then they start, of course, they traded some of it away for terrible deals. And then O'Brien gets fired. Crennel gets named the interim coach. We see the season that they have, despite the fact that Deshaun Watson plays well. I mean, he played really well, considering, I think I saw somebody refer to it as considering the five-alarm fire that was going on all around him, he kept his head. And then they hire Culley as a coach, and they hire the GM without consulting after promising that they were going to consult. They don't consult. Now Watt's leaving. You can sort of, when you start tracing it, like putting it on a piece of paper and marking the dots on a graph, you can sort of see how this has just come apart. They don't act like a winning organization. They got the whatever the disease or the virus is that, you know, we can't do it, get it done in the postseason, and that starts to affect your regular season because you just don't believe in yourselves, and there's just not a lot of confidence in that whole Houston franchise, despite the fact that they had a lot of talent on that roster just an eye blink ago.
Hey, Mitch, Bob mentioned this guy, Jack Easterby, and this, outside of Houston, this will sound like inside baseball, but I refer to you a piece by Damon Amendolara for CBS Sports Radio, okay, who just, he calls this guy Jack the Quack, and he says, he describes Easterby as a power-hungry, manipulative snake charmer who has convinced the naive owner he has all the answers. The football world knows Jack the Quack's intentions. He's seen as a grifter, a quick-talking charmer who caught the ear of the right schnook, meaning Cal McNair. Now, Mitch, I don't know. It sounds like Damon doesn't like Jack Easterby, okay? But he hired, he essentially hired the new general manager. It's quite remarkable how owners can get led around by a guy who gets in their ear and doesn't get out. It's I don't know how things change as long as the McNair family owns this football team.
No, that could be the answer. We've seen that in many, many places, in many sports. But
well, the big question on them still remains is Watson. You know, how is he going to? If you hear the owners talk, if you hear McNair did an interview, and he said, he's our quarterback. We expect him to be our quarterback. You've heard other people say that. Culley has said that, that he took the job thinking that, you know, he's going to be his quarterback. So everybody seems to think that he's going to be the starting quarterback except him. Watson seems to be the one who keeps thinking, I want to be someplace else. And everyone else says, you're not going anyplace else. Now, I will say this.
Speculation, by the way, is that the Dolphins still might be, with all their draft choices and a young quarterback, okay, that they still might be the best possible trade partner. But, you know, it's the old Billy Goldman thing. Nobody knows anything at this point.
Yeah. Although that would be, to me, that would just show you the fickle nature of drafting quarterbacks. Remember that just a blink ago, all the debate was whether if Tua wasn't hurt, would he have been a shoe-in number one pick to be your quarterback? And, the Dolphins looked like they got a steal when they took him at, what was it, number five or whatever in the draft.
Right ahead of Justin Herbert, by the way.
Yeah.
one pick ahead of Herbert.
Right, but he played pretty well this season. Not fantastic, but pretty well. And the main thing is he didn't play hurt. So they're ready to maybe give up on him and to bring in Deshaun Watson, and he becomes the new Josh Rosen. It's crazy how teams have we talked about this the other day, how what used to be like we made our choice, we picked our number, you know, our first round draft pick quarterback, and we're going to stick with him for at least 5 years. That's out the window now. You can make a mistake 1 year and start all over again. Well, for all we know, Trevor Lawrence might not be a Jacksonville Jaguar after a year. You know, somebody they might become disenchanted with him. So I don't know. We'll have to see. Speaking of that, this is a point we want to make. Bob, you want to take it?
Yes, there's another intriguing development in the world of professional football. But before we get to that, reminding you once again that we are brought to you by Geico. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. Jacksonville Jaguars entered into the news in a very large way this week. And Urban Meyer has quickly, I think, realized that he's entered into a different world than the one he left. And he doesn't have the omnipotence that he had in the college world. This whole business of hiring a coach. And now, let me ask you a simple question, guys, well, as a jumping off point. Do you believe that, as we are told by Urban Meyer, that Chris Doyle, the disgraced strength coach, came to him and offered his resignation?
No.
Because he, because, and you know, you certainly don't want to be a quote unquote distraction to your new organization. Do we believe that?
No. No, they just, for some reason, they thought this guy deserved a soft place to land after Meyer made, Mitch, you watched the whole show from him at Ohio State, okay? And Woody Hayes only wishes he had the power that Urban Meyer had at Ohio State. And when you have power like this, I will once again quote an old line from Bill Goldman, who said that stars are exactly like the rest of us. They get up in the morning, they put on their pants, they go to bed at night. Except in between, nobody ever says no to them. Okay, and this to me was classic Urban Meyer.
Well, right, and Bob pointed it out that he tried to bring a college approach and mentality into the NFL, and very quickly found out that there are organizations and outside forces that you have to deal with in the NFL that you don't have to deal with in college, like the Fritz Pollard Alliance and other things like that. In college, you put anybody you want on your staff, and you just tell the alumni and the boosters, I vetted him. He's a good guy. We saw Urban Meyer do this with staff members when it came to domestic violence. Remember? I mean, last time we saw Urban Meyer was basically dealing with that kind of thing in coaching. And now he comes along and puts a guy on his team for a blink, who has a stated history of being offensive to black players to the point of saying, that's right, blacks don't like the water. They can't swim. I mean, these are reported on comments. Do you think you're going to come into the NFL with the issues that are going on in the NFL right now, with the sense of social justice in the NFL right now, with the anger over the failure to hire more black coaches right now, and you're going to put on a white coach who's got a history of making racist comments, and it's going to be fine? Well, I'll tell you where it will be fine. Ohio State.
Mitch, the guy you mentioned, Zach Smith, Meyer got suspended for his handling of the Zach Smith, the domestic violence allegations at the time. He got suspended for that, and he hasn't learned his lesson. He has such, I'm not saying they all have this kind of tunnel vision. He has such amazing tunnel vision, and that's, Mitch, you've talked about this more than once. This is what happens when you're the most, not just the most powerful guy at a school, you may be the most powerful guy in the state.
Right. You remember he was suspended. But he was suspended for like the first three games of the season, I think. I think they won all three of them, or two of the three of them. And then he came back, and everything was fine. And that's the way that he looks at life and football and the world around Urban Meyer. The world, according to Urban Meyer, is that he can do whatever he wants because he's Urban Meyer. And he'll find out, Meyer will, in the NFL, that the coaches, it's not a coach's league. Okay, it's not a coach's sport. The college football is a coach's sport. You're the biggest star on the team. You are the biggest name. You get paid all the money. The players don't get. Now he's working in a place where everybody's getting paid a lot of players are getting paid as much as him, and a lot of them are getting paid a whole lot more than him. And if they have to choose between coach and player, they may choose player. He hasn't been in that situation before, and he just had a quick comeuppance before he ever played a game about who he can surround himself with and what his staff is going to look like. And that was a pretty tone-deaf move, and even though it lasted 5 minutes, there's going to be some repercussions from that. Do you think the African-American players on the Jaguars didn't pay attention to that?
Oh, no, absolutely. Hey, Mike, I got a little aside for you. Did you know that Chris Doyle is from Quincy, Mass., is a member of the Boston College High School Hall of Fame and played football at Boston University? I didn't know till all this spook.
I didn't know that. What I do know is this is going to be very interesting with Urban Meyer, who comes across, you know, who kind of reinvented himself as this aw shucks good old guy on TV. And
he didn't,
you
know, fool it, me.
And this me either.
How many former players of his have been, oh, I don't know, arrested? this is a big old stay tuned in Jacksonville. Okay, because he's going to want to do things his way. And for all the reasons we've talked about today, it doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way. Baseball is now a general, you know, baseball is not a manager sport anymore, Mitch. It's a general manager sport.
It's a general
okay?
Absolutely.
It's one of the reasons why the Tigers are in the situation. But, you know, that's...
But here's what Meyer has going for him. 5-11, 6-10, 1-15. Those are the last three seasons for the Jacksonville Jaguars. And when it's been 4 years since you've even had a winning record, and take away 2017, which was a bit of an anomaly, they were 10-6, then go back 3-13, 5-11, 3-13, 4-12, 2-14, 5-11, and 8-8. Okay, there is no winning tradition in Jacksonville. If he turns them, I mean, you're coming in for 1-15, anything's going to look good. And you're going to have a young star quarterback that everybody knows who played not too far away, and they're going to increase their ticket sales, and they're going to, and so everybody's, he walked into a great situation for a year or two. Then, you know, if he gets them to 5-11 and he gets them to 8-8, then what? And you know, at what price? And we'll see how he does. I have no doubt. Listen, you're right, Mike. I watched the whole show, and begrudgingly, living in Michigan, you have to give him his due as a coach. He took apart Michigan every year that they played. He figured it out, and even when he didn't have the better team necessarily on paper or talent, he still managed to win the game. He was a brilliant college coach, and he did it in multiple places. So you can't just say, well, yeah, you get comfortable, or you're at Alabama, of course they're going to do that. He did it in multiple places, different conferences. And so can he do it in the NFL? We'll see if his type of motivation and organization works, but this was not a great first step. Agreed?
Yep.
It's irrefutable, Mitch. And again, it's this, I'll just say this before we get to parting shots, okay? This was a self-inflicted wound. What did he think was going to happen when he hired this asshat? Really?
And our strength coach is that hard to find. You can't find one that doesn't have a record like that. All right, this week's parting shots are brought to you by American Giant. American Giant makes clothing that's durable and made to last. Try it for yourself. You'll feel the difference. And you can get 15% off your first order when you use the promo code REPORTERS at American-Giant.com. That's 15% off when you use the code REPORTERS at American-Giant.com. Time to dash into parting shots. Mike Lupica, lead us off.
Now, parting shots.
It was 28 months ago that the Boston Red Sox concluded what everybody agreed was the greatest season in franchise history. They won 108 regular season games and a memorable American League Championship Series against the Astros, and then nearly swept the Dodgers in the World Series. This was done, at least in part, by one of the most complete and young outfields the Red Sox had ever had: Mookie Betts, Jackie Bradley Jr., Andrew Benintendi. As great as Mookie is and was, Bradley was really the hitting star of that Astros series, and Benintendi made the diving play of his life to save Game 4 in the bottom of the ninth. Now Betts is gone, and Benintendi's gone from the Killer Bees, and we're still waiting to see where Jackie Bradley Jr. lands as a free agent. This is the old line about the sports gods. You want to make them laugh? Tell them about your plans.
You know, there are 29 NBA teams and one giant lab experiment in Brooklyn. We all wondered how the three ball-dominant stars could share the one basketball. Yes, it's early, but I must admit, I am dumbstruck, gobsmacked, and downright amazed to see what James Harden is doing thus far. I know he always had assists, but I could never remember any of them. Well, Saturday night, as Mike had pointed out earlier, he had 16 in a win over Golden State. He's played 9 games for the Nets and has had double-figure assists in 7 of them. The most field goals he's taken in any game is 20, which he's done twice. Are you ready for his last 3 per-game attempts? 14, 13, and 11. I'll be honest, I didn't know if James Harden had this in him, but let's check back in a month or so and see how it's going. I still can't believe it.
How's this for a near miss? The Tampa Bay Bucks almost cut Leonard Fournette just before they took off on a winning streak that saw them win the Super Bowl. Three quarters of the way through the season, Fournette was unhappy with his usage. Stop if you've heard that one before. Bruce Arians, the Tampa coach, made him inactive for week 14, then called him in the next day and had the come to Jesus conversation. Either get on board or say you want to be cut and we'll do it. Fortunately for Fournette, he decided to be a team guy. Shortly thereafter, Ronald Jones, the starting back, got hurt, then got hurt again. Fournette stepped up, and in four playoff games, he had 300 yards, three touchdowns, 148 yards receiving, and another touchdown catching. He also had the only touchdown that Tom Brady didn't throw in the Super Bowl. Playoff Lenny was his nickname, but Patient Lenny was the reason for his ultimate success. That's going to wrap things up for today's program. We do this Mondays and Thursdays, so we'll be back in a few days. If you like what you heard, please leave us a comment. If you really like what you heard, leave us a nice rating. We always appreciate both things. You can tell your friends they can hear the Sports Reporters podcast on Apple and Stitcher and Spotify and Pandora and any place you get a popular podcast. Until we see you on Thursday, on behalf of Bob Ryan and Mike Lupica, I'm Mitch Albom, telling you, have a great week.